Oof, feeling old.
Yeah, very old, actually. Yes. So look, did you bring the cake?
No, you said you bring the cake. I always bring the cake. It's time you brought something to this party.
You always eat the cake. I
That's
don't know
true.
about bring the cake. I mean, I bought all the candles, 300 of them.
And the fire extinguisher.
Oh, good luck trying to blow all those out. Welcome, everybody, to episode
300.
300 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is still Nick Page after all these episodes, and there, as he always has been, is Joe Davis.
Hello! And hello, the 17. Well done. You made it to 300. God bless you all.
This is our 300th episode. I don't know if there's anyone out there who's listened to all 300. That would be
torture.
That would be more frankly than I did, you know. But well done if that's you. Very, very impressed.
It would be 299 more than Claire has.
Yes, yes, yes. She's listened to one. She's not worried about listening to any more. So, yes, so over the course of this episode, we thought we'd talk about what we learned, really, over the course of 300 episodes and so many wasted hours. But, of course, the first thing to say is thank you. Thanks to all
indeed.
The listeners, all the 17, for supporting us because, I never dreamed we'd be going this long.
It's just we just did it for a joke.
Yes.
Because we knew no one would listen.
Yeah, we've often said we thought we'd be, you know, do 10 and be done with it. So no, we're always so grateful, and this is just a wonderful opportunity to thank you for supporting the podcast, for giving to the podcast, for writing in.
Yeah.
You know, we have many regular correspondents. We have some very irregular correspondence as well. We value all of you, and it's wonderful. It's been a wonderful experience.
Yeah. Well said, buddy. Thank you. Yeah.
And it's not over yet, sadly.
No.
But anyway, in the meantime, let's just catch up because we've both been away on holidays.
We have. Yeah. So where did you go?
Well, I went to Essex.
You did.
And I went to a lovely little town called Maldon. Which is interesting. Essex is fascinating, actually, because it's beautiful. A lot of it's beautiful. It's very unfairly stereotyped, I think. And so it has the landscape of Suffolk, really, and East Anglia. It has the architecture of Kent, you know, with the sort of clapperboard houses and all that kind of stuff. And everybody speaks like an extra from EastEnders. So, you know, it's a real mix of worlds, I'll tell you. But we went to this place called Maldon, stayed in a converted sail loft, which is lovely, overlooking the Blackwater Estuary. Lots of birds, went to wonderful churches. Mm. Oh, Joe.
And there he goes, spoiling it.
No, listen, in Greenstead, there's a place called Greenstead in Ongar where there's a church that has its original Saxon wooden walls.
Good.
So these are oak timbers that are 1,000 years old.
Okay.
Well, over that, 1,400 years old, probably. Hmm. Isn't that amazing? And
it's certainly old.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think they could afford to replace them, to be honest.
And then there's a wonderful church called St. Peter's. St. Peter's on the Wall at Bradwell-on-Sea, and it's out on the marshes. It's a Saxon church. It's just amazing. So did a bit of church crawling, a bit of bird watching, went to the Isle of Wight after that, you know, a bit of time travelling. And, you know, that was lovely as well. So I had a good time, yeah.
Great.
You're on holiday as well.
I am, yeah, yeah. So this week we're here in lovely Worthing. Who needs to go anywhere when you live in Worthing? But last week we were in Norfolk. Lovely, stayed in a village called Thompson. Beautiful. I love Norfolk.
Thompson?
Thompson, yeah, like the holidays. Or was it? Was it renamed Tui? I'm not sure.
Seems like the surname rather.
It does.
Than
yes,
name.
I know that. But it was lovely. It was a little place, but it had its own jacuzzi. outside. Oh, well, not outside. Actually,
a village jacuzzi.
It was just for me and my wife of 40 years. The other one couldn't make it, so
the newer one.
So yes, that's what we did. But I met a listener, of course, the fabulous Glenn. We met in Dereham up there.
Oh, right. Yeah, which was, I know Dereham.
And what a lovely man. Glenn, it was an absolute joy to meet you. And thank you for dinner. It's delicious.
Oh, there we go.
No. Well, listen, before we go any further, in Thompson, there's this very famous, very old. You probably like it because it's a very old pub, 16th century, I believe. Mm. Anyway, called the Checkers. Had the best steak and ale pie I've ever had.
Great.
It was made on the premises. It was absolutely world class, if a little large, even for a big man like me.
Mm.
But yes, so that was wonderful. Oh, and I tell you what, when we came back Saturday, we went to see the marvellous Wilderthorn. And he was playing in this barn up at Chanctonbury Ring. And at one point in the evening, while he's performing, an owl flew over his head and threw out a barn owl through the window at the back of the barn. I mean, it was just amazing. It was a very starry night and I could see all the stars through the open doors there. Oh, it's just extraordinary experience. So much love to John and Dan.
Let me rewind that slightly.
Okay.
An owl.
Yes, an owl, a barn owl that roosts in the barn. We were in the barn owl's home for the gig.
And playing a load of music, and it just decided, I've had enough of this, I'm going.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, after a while. We're not sure that the owl didn't like it. He actually just needed to stretch his wings.
It's all very Harry Potter, isn't it?
Wilderthorn is an extraordinary artist. It's all about sounds and moods and responsiveness to the people in the room and the place and the nature around the place. It's impossible to describe. You just have to go. That's what you have to do. Okay. Yeah, it's a wonderful...
It sounds a sort of magical moment.
It was a wonderful evening, genuinely a wonderful... And, of course, notwithstanding, Wilderthorn... John Bilbra and the lovely Roslyn. I'm in fact two of the 17.
Oh, that's very nice. Hello.
Bless them. Yeah. Hi.
How about the owl? Is that a listener?
I don't know. I forgot to ask.
It's very remiss of you. No. Oh, I tell you another thing. Forgot to say this.
Hmm.
We watched Ted Lasso.
Oh.
You know, because you bought us that voucher.
And? Oh, no. This is a tense moment.
Well, it's great, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't accuse me of being an early adopter, to be fair. It has been out a while, but no, I loved it. Yeah, we don't generally, Claire and I, binge watch anything, you know, like, but we watched five in a row.
Wow.
So good. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, we were on the Isle of Wight. It wasn't much else to do, to be honest, but you know.
Wash your mouth out.
Yeah, I know. It's not true.
You're upsetting all the Isle of Wight listeners. They are more fearsome than independent financial advisors, let me tell you.
Some of them might be both. Have you thought about that? Offshore finance.
Ted Lasso is, I think, if I had to name my most favourite series ever, that would win the award.
It does a very difficult trick. One of the hardest things to do in narrative storytelling, which is to portray somebody genuinely good.
Yeah.
And to make it convincing.
Yeah.
It's really hard. It's partly hard because nobody ever tries it very much. I always think because it's much easier to write villains, but you know.
Yes. Good point.
It does it very, very well. It's very unusual to see that. So yeah, enjoying that. Yeah. Okay. No spoilers, please.
Okay.
So, should we get on with this huge celebration?
Well, listen, I know you said no feedback today, but here's just one piece from Rachel, who wrote in saying, sending congratulations, thanks and best wishes on the 300th episode. She said, I could email in almost every week in response to the podcast as I enjoy and appreciate listening to your conversations, but I will try and keep this email pithy. And for that, we thank you, Rachel. She says, I just emailed to say that I have just spotted that Negroni Week, #NegroniWeek.com, 16th to the 22nd of September, has been organised to coincide with your 300th episode, which seems the most fortuitous way to celebrate. Congratulations and thanks, Rachel. So there you go. It's Negroni week.
I mean, other Christian podcasts might want to achieve higher things, but I think if we've introduced people to Negronis, our work here is done.
I think in many ways it has. So we hope that if you're listening to this on Saturday, Saturday evening provides an opportunity for you all for a Negroni. On us.
Indeed. Yes. Yes.
I say on us. On us.
Don't invoice, please. Anyway, look, what we're going to do in this episode is we thought we'd do some unashamed nostalgia in a way, or, you know, just we don't often do this, I think, but just have a sort of self-reflecting moment and think, actually, I say we don't often do it. We do it most weeks, if I'm honest. But anyway, you know, just think about, well, what have we learned over the course of 300 episodes and 8 years, nearly 8 years of doing this thing?
Extraordinary. That is extraordinary.
That's a long sentence. That really is.
I was a young man when we started.
Were you?
Yeah. I mean, you were still old, but yeah.
Well, I was old when I was young, but, you know, that's different. So we're going to just alternate, I think, and just sort of talk about some things that we've learned and indeed are still learning, I suppose.
Yes.
As we go along. And so I'm going to kick off.
Yeah, sure.
And the thing that I've learned, one of the things that I've learned, is I've learned that there are a lot of people out there who are in this situation.
Yeah.
I think that's the first thing we learn, really. Because as we said, we never expected to go on for this long or to speak to quite so many people. It's a bit more than 17. And yet, you know, there's so many people who are in mid-faith crisis or have been through it or are sort of engaging with it or just entering it. And so that was always a big surprise to me. And I think perhaps a bit of a wake-up call, really, to the church and to those of us in any kind of teaching ministry or writing or anything like that. There are loads of people out there who are decluttering their faith.
Yeah, that's right. And I think quite often people say to me, oh, you know, we thought we were the only ones, or words to that effect. No, you're really not the only ones.
No.
I mean, I get a warped view because obviously all the emails come in and you think, gosh, everyone feels this way. I'm sure they don't. But certainly judging from all the emails over those 8 years, nearly 8 years, we can definitely encourage people with the fact that you are not alone. People are questioning and trying to really make sense of the Christian faith they inherited from when they grew up or whenever they started. Yeah. Mm. Well, OK, so is it me now? Is that how we're doing this?
Oh, that's how we're doing this.
No, I like it. I like it. Well, I've gone in with the big one, and I'm going to say that over the last 8 years, I've discovered that God is not who I thought she was at all. So I think that's been one of the biggest transformations, I think. And you know that I have sort of tried to make the switch from talking about God to talking about the divine, because I still find, even in my own language, God comes with baggage. God feels very masculine and male and Zeus-like. And, you know, that's just kind of what I associate with that word. And so it's more helpful for me to use the divine. And I think it's sort of, you know, I embrace the mystery of that word more than I do with God, the divine. What on earth do I mean by that? Well, I don't always know what I mean by that. But do I have a greater and deeper sense of the divine around me and within me? Yes, definitely I do, because I think in the older days, and I was moving away from this idea when we started the podcast 8 years ago, I think I thought God is someone up there who I need to address a certain degree of respect and reverence, and, you know, I need to get their attention by praying to them, him. But that's not how I see the God reality any longer, and quite grateful for that.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I think that is you should do a book with that title, God is Not Who You Think She Is, unless somebody's already done it, because that's a great title for a book. And you should definitely do that. I mean, obviously, it being you, it might be Join the Dots book, but even and secondly, I think, you do actually have this idea that God is all around, I think, you know, but it's also tempered by your view of God as a kind of surveillance operative.
Yes,
you know,
that's kind of, right.
You know, God is all around. God is surrounding us, and in him we live and move and have our being, but he's always watching, you know?
Exactly.
So it's not just the presence of God, I think, is so powerful, but it's also the understanding perhaps a different view of who God actually is. So, yeah, great.
Yeah.
So my second one.
Yeah.
What have I learned? I've learned that the title doesn't tell the whole story.
Ah, right. You mean the title of the podcast?
Yes.
Yeah.
So a little bit of history. You know, you came up with the title, which I thought was a brilliant title. Mm. You know, and I had been thinking about doing a podcast for quite some time. And I think we might have spoken about it. Mm. But I'll be honest, I'd been speaking with other people as well.
Oh.
Before you came along, Judas. Before I found Mr. Wright. And but I couldn't work out, you know, what on earth was it? And then it was part of a journey that I wrote a book called Dark Night of the Shed, which was sort of about deconstructing your life, or the second part of life, which fed into this.
Mm.
And then when you said, I think we should do a podcast and I think it should be called this, it was just clicked. And I thought, this is a great idea. And I'm very happy with it. So I'm not really questioning the title. I'm just saying that actually what I've learned over the years is that, you know, the crisis is, we're not always in crisis.
No, sure.
I suppose if you look at crisis as the Greek word krinein, meaning decision point, or, you know, we're often in that place ongoing. We're always making decisions about what we believe. But I think it doesn't feel uncomfortable to me to be in this place actually at all. And I think probably quite a lot of listeners will have experienced that actually, the crisis itself, the initial bit feels uncomfortable, but maybe, you know, you can actually settle down in this place and see things differently.
I think you're absolutely right. Also, don't you think the talk of seasons is more helpful in a way? I mean, you know, like there can be a bit of a crisis season or deeply questioning, but then you return to a certain amount of peace for a while and you can be fooled in that moment to be thinking, I think I might have it now.
Yes.
Which is the worst place you can ever be. Only for it to circle back round. And I think I find the image of a circle more and more helpful, a cycle, a season. Because that seems to me how it is. I have times when I'm really disorientated. In fact, death does it most of the time. Yeah. I had a friend die in Mexico, one of my brother's last remaining friends, who I was looking forward to seeing next year. He died very suddenly, a quick heart attack. He was 62 years old. And then, of course, today we had the news of dear Steve Legg.
Yeah.
Who is a wonderful Christian man, magician, larger than life character, just an absolutely lovely fella who, he had cancer and he died last night. And by the way, if anyone is listening who knows him, much love to you all, especially the family. And I find death very disorientating. And in the cycle of faith, that will always bring around a sort of crisis for me. And I think there is that sense of, I'm in a season of that, you know, shock of grief and death again. And with all the questions that raises. And I think it's the same for the spiritual life. I think we go through seasons and, you know, winter, spring, summer and autumn feels about right. I don't think I deny to you so much the sort of the sadness of life. I always felt I should never feel sad, especially as an Enneagram 7, that there's something wrong if I ever feel sad.
Right.
Now I think, it's the part of the deal is to embrace a bit of sadness sometimes, because life is really sad sometimes, whether you're a Christian or not. That's just how it is.
Yeah, you know, I think the joy of theology is that there's always comes along something new to make you annoyed or angry or...
yeah.
You know, just when you think you've got it all sorted, somebody else comes up with a daft statement.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's not so much the circle of life as the circle of doubt, really. But anyway, I just think mid-faith crisis, mid-faith residence, really, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Okay. I think one of the things that I have learnt is that in cosmic terms, I'm tiny. And that encourages me because I'm quite overweight in reality. No, I think the more I've studied, not so much theology, but, you know, the universe, I mean, it's mind numbing how tiny, not I am, but this planet, our solar system, it's less than a drop in the many oceans of this world. It's so tiny and insignificant. And yet, here's the absurdity. I am not insignificant. In fact, this is the thing that perhaps most makes me believe in the divine. This is, for me, life is so impossible. You know, and you know, in true terms, a fraction closer to the sun, there'd be no life here. A fraction further away, we'd be freezing, there'd be no life here. The chances of life are so stupidly small, intelligent life forms. Do you remember there was a youth worker called Pip Wilson? I think he worked for the YMCA. Actually, it might have been in Essex, in Ilford. Anyway, Pip Wilson used to have this talk. He'd have some kid on the stage and he'd just point at him and say, "You are a winner." He said, "There was once a race. There were 200,000 of you and you won." And he was referring to sperm, which you later reveal. But that's really the end of the journey. That only tells you part of that's only one in 200 million. But once you start to add in the chances of the solar system and our planet and the universe anywhere, it's remarkable that we are alive is so precious, that the value of life is so great, it's unfathomable. And for me, it can't all be an accident. It's one of the greatest evidences for God there could ever possibly be. So I think that in cosmic terms, my wonder of the universe over the last 8 years has not decreased my sense of significance. If anything, it has increased it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's amazing. I mean, we're all statistically improbable.
Yes, really, yeah.
To the highest degree, really.
Trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions to one.
Yeah. Some of us are improbable in other ways as well. But anyway, so the third thing I've learned is that people really need places for both faith and doubt. And this maybe ties into what I was saying about the circle of doubt, what we were talking about earlier. You know, I think more than ever, churches, faith communities have to provide a place for open and non-defensive discussion. I was talking to someone the other day about it, and we were reflecting on what stops people expressing what they're really thinking. And I think it's that sense in some places that they're going to get corrected.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to get sort of not necessarily told off, but everybody wants to sort of solve it them as though they're a problem. And yet, you know, the way of faithful doubting is very important, I think.
Yeah.
I actually think churches can be great places for this, and many of them are. I think some of them struggle, and many of them, you know, there are obvious problems in some places. But I do think it's behoven on all of us to kind of try and give space for people to sort of talk openly about what they're feeling without the feeling they're going to get, you know, either told off or looked at as though they're a problem child, or, you know, and this I always used to find this in home groups and things like this, you know, that people would encourage you to come with questions, but if you did come with questions, what they wanted to give you was an answer basically the whole time. You know, and I was probably one of those people, and probably still am, who will give you an answer, you know. But I just think there's got to be a space where we can just talk.
Yeah, yeah.
And be ourselves.
That's right. Do you know, it's interesting. I was talking to one of the 17 this week, not in person, but via email. They'd sent me their dissertation. In fact, on Karl Rahner. Yeah, it's a fascinating.
Oh, Karl Rahner.
Yeah, fascinating.
Techno artist, wasn't he, from Germany?
No, you're thinking of Karl and the Rahners.
That's right. Craft work.
But he was saying at the end, he was telling me how much he's really loving Nick Cave's new album.
Oh, yeah.
And how he would love a space to discuss the sort of themes and that come up in that, and how much he misses that. But that he feels this podcast is a place where we talk about things. But he'd love a church where you could do that. So you're right. People do need a place they definitely need a place for this sort of discussion, don't they?
And I think it's going to get more, because I read an interesting article, I think it was in the Idler magazine, which is a bit of a strange magazine. I don't know if you know it. It should be called The Rich Idler, really, because it's a lot about sort of just wealthily loafing about, really. But there was an article by the philosopher Mark Vernon talking about the number of people who are coming to faith of a kind as church going is declining. And it's almost like that as it becomes less popular and less sort of the thing to do, more people are in fact finding meaning in it. You know, it's, maybe it'd be cool again. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think when they do come, they're not going to come with, you know, all the sort of orthodox stuff that we're used to. And so we have to find space for that, I think, really.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, it's me again, I guess. Mm. So I was just reflecting on the conversations I've had with so many people as a result of doing the podcast, sometimes with the 17, sometimes with people outside of the 17. And I think that I've realized the transition of my life has been more from, you know, I care about helping people become more patient, kind human beings than I do about getting them to subscribe to a set of religious beliefs. That's certainly where I started. I just thought, almost from the minute I became a Christian at the age of 14, I wanted to be everyone to be in my club. I wanted everyone to be like me. I wanted everyone to have what I had. And now I think, because I think in terms of becoming more Christ-like, who I see as, you know, the right way to live, I'm more concerned about that, helping them with their behavior than with their beliefs. Now, beliefs obviously support behavior, don't they? But not always. Or not always supporting good behaviour, perhaps I could put it that way. So, yes, I think I'm not after converting people to a set of religious dogma anymore. I'm up to helping converting them to living the best life they can.
I don't know when it happened. Maybe in the Reformation, maybe before that. But there was this separation, this idea that somehow there was action and there was belief.
Yes. Exactly.
And those two could be separated out from each other. Mm. Partly, I think, because in the Reformation, the argument was, well, one side has put too much emphasis on action.
Yeah.
And so we're going to swing that pendulum back to it's not action. It's what you, it's faith.
For sure.
Okay. And I don't really know how it's possible to do that and read Jesus, who keeps talking about things like vines and trees and fruit. You cannot separate the fruit from the tree. Well, you can, but only to eat it. But you know what I mean. You know, it's like
be right.
Yeah. The fruit and the tree are inextricably bound.
Bound. Yes. Yeah.
He talks all the time about how people's actions express their true nature, their true relationship with God.
Yeah.
So maybe it's time to sort of stop using all that kind of stuff about, you know, belief and action and find a different word, that one that encompasses the whole thing.
Yes, that would be helpful.
And I don't know quite what that is, but I'm sure there are brilliant people out there who can help me on it. But, you know, there's the wholeness, the whole totality of ourselves, our authentic faith. Yeah. Well, I mean, my next one is kind of to do with that, actually, because what have I learned? Mm. I've learned that it ain't necessarily so, to quote Gershwin. It ain't necessarily so. In terms of this one, in terms of sort of doctrine, because I have changed my belief on certain things over the course of 8 years. Mm. As we looked into different topics, you know, in the days when we did actual work and content, you know, and do you remember those when we looked
like
into
dark
things?
Dark times.
Yeah. Did some reading and. No, we still do that. But, you know, it really helped me because I suddenly realised, oh, there's different ways of looking at this. You know, and I'd written quite a lot of history before doing the podcast. I think I'd done the history of Christianity before doing that, and I'd done a lot of first century history. And so I knew a lot of the theology, but I'd never really twigged that really from early on, there are different ways of looking at things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've loved that, the way you've introduced you know, thinking that I've thought an original thought, or that you know, modern history has brought an original thought, and you've gone, oh no, they did this in the 3rd century.
Yes, yeah. There was this ferment going on in the early church in the first 3 centuries about how to look at things and who says it. And there was lots of arguments, and they were just as badly behaved in small ways as they got later on, you know, because human beings are human beings. But broadly speaking, when it comes to things like heaven, hell, and all this kind of stuff, and salvation and all that, there have been many different ways of looking at them. And so I think that's rather liberating, and I'm looking forward to finding out even more as we go on.
Yeah, well, you know, that links to one of the ones I was going to say, which I probably won't bother now, but that I don't get it. Like, I mean that tongue in cheek, but actually just the mystery of all. You have to be comfortable at some point embracing mystery, because it can't be all explained. It can't, you know, the life can't be explained neatly, systematically. God definitely can't be. I think 8 years of doing a podcast like this makes me sit more comfortably with, oh yeah, I don't know, and I'm never going to know, and that's all right. I know enough. I know enough. I know what's required of me, I think. So, you know, I can't know God, the concept.
And I think that's an important one, because, again, that's liberating. Do you remember the theology of I don't know?
Yes.
You know, that...
Of course. Rely on it heavily.
Yeah, and it's quite liberating when you can turn around and go, well, I don't really know the answer to that, actually. I have no idea. You know, and believe me, you don't have to have an opinion on everything. You know, this is something that my wife is often telling me, but that I'm beginning to grasp. We don't actually have to have an opinion on every bit of theology. We can just go, oh, I don't know about that. No idea. So I think that mystery one's important.
Yeah, yeah.
So is it me again? It is. You clue the mystery. So I'm going to say my next one is linked to doctrine, I suppose. Here's what I've learned. I've learned that the word of God is still powerful, although not in the way you think.
Say more.
Well, I suppose one of the biggest things that happened to me over the course of the last 8 years in terms of doing the podcast run was I wrote the Badly Behaved Bible. And that was really a summation of lots of years of thinking about the Bible and teaching about it, and really being challenged by people's questions and just reading it and seeing what was there. And so I've actually grown to appreciate the Bible in a way that I didn't before, but also to not read it in the same way at all, really. You know, to read some parts of it very, very differently. And that's been a really good journey to go on, and I'm carrying on going with that.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing about the Bible as a text is you keep finding stuff that really challenges you and amazes you and speaks into your life. And you read the Bible and you find stuff that suddenly speaks to you in this powerful way. I was reading yesterday in Proverbs, it was Proverbs 14, verse 10. It says, each heart knows its own bitterness, and no one else can share its joy. I've never read that before in my life. And I'm thinking, gosh, that is absolutely right. That is absolutely right. Everybody, you know, we often talk about nobody else can understand really, you know, what your sadness is or your experience. And no one else can share truly your joy. Each heart knows its own bitterness. And they're all each unique. Just amazing. So, yes, I have learned to incredibly value scripture, to look at it differently and to recognise its power, but it doesn't operate in the same way for me.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Well, I'm going to go with this one. I think one of the things that you've certainly helped me see is that I am a lot stranger than I thought I was or ever wanted to admit.
So true.
I think you do learn. I really don't think there can be any growth without really knowing myself. So that's a very uncomfortable journey, really delving. I think most of us start off quite fearfully, because we're afraid we're a freak. We're afraid we're alone. We're afraid we're crazy. We're afraid that no one could be as, you know, mixed up as we are. And I think I'm learning to be comfortable with the actual me that is. I mean, I am absurd at times. you know, I can lead a funeral service, which is a very responsible thing to do. Back in the day, I could preach to hundreds of people a fairly responsible sermon. But, you know, if my office gets untidy, I'm overwhelmed and I can't seem to pick up one piece of paper and put it away in the place where it needs to be filed. And I have a little meltdown, you know, and it's like, I, on the one hand, I'm this, you know, sort of almost competent man at times. And at other times, you know, so completely immature. And I say that because I think you have to sort of, I suppose I'm realising that transformation is slow, much slower than I want it to be. I think sometimes I overpromised how quickly transformation could come to someone. But that journey of faith with the divine, it's a slow old walk. And I just think there's no way of getting closer to God without getting honest with yourself as well. In some ways, I think that good religion, good theology and good therapy are doing a very similar thing. Yeah. They're giving us a chance to heal our wounds. They're giving us a chance to love ourselves if they're doing it right. And sometimes they don't do it right, theology or therapy. But when they're at their best, they're doing it right. Like I said before, I think psychology and theology sort of are merging together for me very much now. I think as I discover myself more, I'm learning more about the love of God. I think as I discover the love of God, I'm learning more about myself, and I can't always work out which is which.
Mm.
So that's been a definite part of the journey over the last 8 years.
And I think that the church in the past, or the Christian teaching in the past, has had a sort of very ambivalent view of this, because it's preached sort of self-denial, which is okay, but it's confused it with self-hatred, I think, at times.
Yes, I think so.
And therefore, there's this idea of, you know, denying yourself means denying who you are. That's not what it means at all.
No, of course not. But,
as you were saying early on, you know, it was statistically improbable. We're all absolutely unique. we're all individual, loved by God, cherished, loved into being. You know, and if you can accept that, then you can actually do the other work and think about yourself honestly without hating yourself.
Yes. It's a good basis.
I don't think I ever really hated myself, but I think I was just totally disappointed with myself all the time. You know, and I think I felt God was as well.
Yes, inevitably you then push that out onto the divine.
So. You know, I think you'd feel a sort of failure, and yet that's not how you are viewed, I don't think. I think, you know, so I think that you need the two, really, and only for me, I suppose, knowing that I'm loved and cherished, not only by God, but by other people, gives you the strength to sort of be honest and vulnerable about who you are, really, and to work at that.
Yeah. In fact, that feels like, you know, when you are going through a crisis and you're rooting, you know, digging up the foundations of the old and putting in the new, you do start to realise that actually love for God and love for yourself are the best foundations you can put in place.
I think people are just amazing. It just makes me so angry when I see people who don't love themselves or don't you know, value themselves or think they've got nothing to give or keep putting themselves down. I don't like it at all.
Yeah,
you know.
Sure. Well, it's sad. Yeah.
It is sad. Anyway, what have I got? Oh, look, let's go with this one. What have I really learned? Well, this has been part of you know, the ongoing journey, is that I think for me, Jesus, the figure of Jesus, the teaching of Jesus, the example and presence of Jesus is more important than ever. As I kind of look at Christianity, we have to make sure that there's Christ in it. It's kind of inherent in it, but sometimes there's not much Christ-likeness in historical Christianity when I look at it.
Yeah.
And in my own walk of faith, am I really being Jesus-like? Am I really believing in his presence, teaching an example? Am I really being a disciple? For me, that's what it comes down to, because that's like that is really where I entered this podcast, having written The Dark Night of the Shed, in which I argue basically the purpose of your life is to be a disciple. That's fullness of life.
Yeah,
that's what it's about, to follow Jesus. That's what I found. Am I really living that out? I hope I am a bit more, but you never know. But that is the ongoing journey. And I think that in the podcast, really, you know, I'm unashamedly always going to try and bring it back to Christ. Not in a kind of, oh, you know, come to Jesus and be saved altar call kind of way, but actually come to Jesus and experience fullness of life, you know, live life differently.
Yeah. Yes, and I think I wouldn't phrase it the way you've... I mean, that's typical you, sucking up to Jesus.
I mean, yeah, you, I know.
I know, like some favoured son, yeah.
He gets very angry if we don't mention him, doesn't he? He gets all smitey.
Yeah, I mean, I think the invitation of Jesus was always to follow him, not necessarily believe a whole load of dogma about him. And the following means, you know, learning from his wisdom and his teachings, which I completely agree, as relevant today, if not more so, than they've ever been. So, you know, you want to look at what you really need to embrace in your life. Well, it's going to be some radical love, and it's going to be some forgiveness, and it's going to be all those kind of things that Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Jesus is still very important.
Well, there we are. That's a good...
we agreed.
It's good theological value statement. Jesus is still very important.
There we are. There's the title.
Well, anyway, look, those were our reflections on where we've come. We could have gone on much longer and said a few things more, but...
We didn't want to bore you on our 300th episode.
I feel a Negroni calling me, if I'm honest. I've been wanting one ever since they were mentioned at the beginning. So I think it only remains for us to say, do let us know on what you've learned over the course of listening to us. Although if it's never to listen to us again, you know, maybe...
Keep that to yourself.
Maybe I don't need to know that. But, you know, I wouldn't blame you, but I just don't need to know it. But let us know about your journey. We're always fascinated and honoured to hear that kind of story. Thank you so much for listening. Mm. I mean... Really, what we said at the beginning is true. We only do this because I think we're well, we enjoy it, don't we? I suppose we'd do it if nobody listened, really. Yeah, but it's nice to have other people listening in, isn't it?
It is. It's lovely. It is. No, thank you all so much. And do write into joe@midfaithchrist.org. Love to hear your reflections and how you feel you've grown over the past few years or since you've been listening to the podcast. Have you listened to 300? You surely haven't. But if you have, very well done. You deserve a Negroni.
Mm, yeah. Or other cocktails are available, including, I believe, the Total Depravity, which we invented some time back. But anyway, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back with you for episode 301 next week.